This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
When I have on these podcast guests, I really want to know, how is this going to affect me and what can I learn from it? So Peter's experience at Portland State University, I feel like that does occasionally happen to me. Not in the same category or, you know, not in the same, I'm not political in that way, but of course, people sometimes get upset over things I write or say, and I want to know how people like Peter deal with it rather than succumb to anxiety or regret or depression. Anyway, let's see what Peter did. So now let's get to exactly what happened to you and what you're going to do about it. So you went, all this happened, nobody's responding to you, you get reported, you don't know what racial justice is, you don't know why it's the highest priority of the university, and you don't know how this got decided, and you don't know how it's going to affect you if you don't teach conforming to these guidelines that were suddenly imposed upon you. You go to the dean, and what happens?
Oh, there's just way, there's way more to the story than that. I mean,
oh, well, you know, well, tell me.
Well, I've just repeated it so many times now, but you know, like I go, it's in my letter, you know, I go and I'm to this hearing, which isn't even about what they're talking about. And I'm told, you know, I can't render my opinion about protected classes or teach in any way that my opinion about. And I just remember being so stunned by that. I asked an individual who was in that meeting, like, clarify that for me. And this individual clarified, I'm like, yeah, okay. Ah, so that's the other thing in the book. Like, if you don't understand something, like, say, really, is this what you mean? And then I said this, and he repeated, and I'm like, wow, okay, so that I did understand that correctly. So there were just conditions, and there were, it just became so crazy. It just became a, it wasn't a symposium where people get together and they argue and they, you know, converse. It was a catechism. The whole thing was like a big church.
Well, let me ask you what you learned. Like, did you learn what racial justice means according to them? How did they define it ultimately?
Well, that's okay. So that's,
is that so, just black race? Is it
no.
Jewish
so,
race?
Okay. I mean, I can tell you what the literature says about that because I've done more than my homework. I've done deep dives. I've read the original source material. I've done all of this, but, and this isn't a cheat on your question. I don't want to speak for somebody else. Okay. Maybe you should invite the president of the provost of Portland State University. That'd be a great thing. He'll never come on your show, but invite him and say, hey, I really want to know what racial justice is and why it should be the highest priority. I mean, if nobody will talk to me, maybe someone will talk to you.
Because maybe racial justice in his mind means everybody should just be a good person to everybody else. Well, okay. If somebody wants to say it's the highest priority of a public university, maybe that's fine. I don't know. But the real issue is that somehow they labeled you an enemy and they wouldn't talk to you.
But even if that is the, even if, you know, all rational people, every sane person would consent to that, given that there's no definition, how do you know that that's actually what he's talking about?
Right. That's good. That's the question. That's the reason why I'm asking what's the definition, but okay.
But
given
that
it's a mess.
The only way to figure that out is to ask somebody who believes it. Like, I'm the wrong person to ask that question to.
What about other professors who were like, oh yeah, of course, did every professor instantly go stop talking to you, or what happened?
Oh no, this was a long, you know, when I published my Sokol style hoax paper, I co-published it in 2017, claiming that penises were social constructs. My trouble predated that when I started asking questions. And the more questions I asked, the more troubles I had. You know, I was constantly accused of microaggressions. I asked for evidence of microaggressions, that microaggressions are real things. And I was accused of that being a microaggression. I brought up the article, Scott Lillenfield's 2017 article, Microaggression, Strong Claims, Inadequate Evidence. I was told that the article itself was a microaggression. I mean, it was really like things that people at junior high did to each other on the playground.
So just to summarize, I know of the story, you did a hoax paper where you used all the language of academia and culture studies and so on. And you basically showed that a penis, which is a physical object on a man's body, is not that. It's a social construct. And you got it published. People
so
were...
So you couldn't even say man anymore, but yes, correct.
Yeah. Well, I would have said man. It struck me as I was being more scientific somehow. So,
But it's not about science. It's about ideology, right?
Right. So, and that's the problem. So the fact that you were able to get this published is funny to me because it's so obviously not a social construct.
So let's talk about that, because you're going to get 50,000 comments about that. So we published this piece and many of the critics were correct. And they said, this is a low ranking journal. We wrote it up in the Skeptic magazine, Michael Shermer's magazine. This does not prove what you think it proves. If you want to prove what you think your point is, you have to do A, B, C, D, E. So I said, all right, let's do A, B, C, D, E. We did A, B, C, D, E. We published far more papers and far better journals arguing morally repugnant and absurd things. And the consequence of that was not, oh, gee, maybe there's a problem with this body of literature. Maybe we shouldn't be so quick to formulate public policies based upon what comes out of this vein of thought. But the consequence was to come after me, to besmirch my integrity, to say that I'm a right-wing maniac. I mean, anything other than one iota of self-reflection.
So what journal published it? I forget.
The Conceptual Penis as a Social Construct?
Yeah.
Cogent Social Sciences. And the Sokol Squared, we published 7 papers before the Wall Street Journal busted us. We probably would have gotten 12 or maybe 13, 14 even. I doubt 14, but probably 13. And each of those papers was more deranged than the other one. And you can find those papers. We've posted them all along with the reviewer comments online.
And did people say, I haven't read the paper, so I apologize about that. But like, did people kind of, I guess they published you, so they said, okay, yeah. I guess I don't understand. Does a social construct mean it's not like a real scientific thing?
Okay, so that's the big thing now. And I just retweeted something, how prescient the social, the conceptual penis was. So it is the belief, okay, so this is kind of complicated to understand, and it's going to break your brain for a minute, but I have learned to think, I've read this stuff so deeply that I have learned to think how these individuals think. So at core of all of this is biology denialism, right? So it's even denialism of evolution. The moral substructure to that is that these things lead to racism. We can talk to that about that, but let's just bracket that for now. So inherent with biology denialism is the idea that if things aren't rooted in biology, then they're a construct. They're just made up, right? So if something is just made up, then all we need to do is either change the meanings of words. I'm giving you a crash course in like 60 seconds here. Change the meanings of words, so then it changes the way people think differently about things, or change the structures in which the power dynamics are operative. So you can think about it like, I co-published a piece, I think in 2000, maybe 14 or something, Privilege is the Original Sin. And I contrasted privilege in the social justice literature to Christian original sin, and showing how social justice was a kind of religion, a religion that's now taken over almost all of our institutions. And so with that idea, what they want to do is they want to level the privilege hierarchy. Just as the communists wanted to level the economic hierarchy, the woke want to level the privilege hierarchy.
Okay, and but let me ask you a question, though.
I know, there's just so much there.
So, but I'm going to ask you just a basic question, so, and I think it'll put this in context a little better. So if I say, she's a man, okay, and yeah, I'm almost sounding derogatory there, but I saw there's better ways to do this, but... you know, the concept of man is obviously a biological concept, but it is also a social concept. Like, we have cliches about what a man is, and, you know, like someone said to me the other day, I feel like less of a man because I couldn't fix something in the basement. And so in that sense, man is often used as a social construct, And so there's still a line there. Like, obviously that person is not...
I don't think anybody's denying that there are socially constructed aspects of masculinity.
And femininity and all these things. So I can understand, like, oh, this person's doesn't have a penis. I might mean that this person's, like, not acting manlike in some, you know, maybe immature way of understanding what a man is. But, you know, I might be able to use it as a social construct rather than a biological one.
Right. So I missed the question. There's so much going on in the conversation.
So the question is there, could a penis be considered a social construct and a biological one at the same time?
I mean, yeah, anybody could consider anything. I mean, if you can consider virtually the whole society, everything, race is a social construct, everything. Look, one of the underlying roots of this is the reason that you have to consider things social constructs is because as Kendi and Ta-Nehisi Coates, et cetera, have written, any disparity in outcomes has to be due to problems in the system, right? And so you automatically take out the possibility of genetic variance and genetic difference. Now, that's an ugly road that I don't want to go down, and I don't think anybody should go down. But the question remains, why couldn't there just be cultural differences? And I mean, of course there are cultural differences. I mean, the best example of that is, if you've ever gone to Brazil, you ever gone to Brazil?
No.
Well, in Brazil, they eat avocados with sugar. And in virtually every other place I've ever been, Mexico and the U.S., et cetera, they eat, I think my dog's going to go berserk because the UPS guy's here. They eat avocados. I eat avocados with salt and spice. So that's a cultural thing. So any difference in outcome, so that's not a racial example, but you can have cultural factors that are causally responsible for different outcomes.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, like, was your paper kind of, even though it was a hoax, but was it kind of implying that penis was just a social construct, that any use of the word penis, people mean it socially?
I think people should just read the paper themselves. I think it's extremely funny. There's a lot of vulgarities in there. It says that penises are responsible for climate change, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a funny. So we said
that
there are
get published?
Actual penises do exist. So the conceptual penis was just the forerunner for the 1,000-pound hammer, which was Sokol squared. And that was the targeting of the best journals, absurd, morally reprehensible conclusions. The famous one that everybody talks about is that, you know, dog parks are petri dishes for canine rape culture. And we talked about the deranged, totally deranged agenda. By the way, that paper won an award for pride of place in the journal. So, you know, it just goes to show you what we're talking about here. Are fat bodybuilding, there should be a category of bodybuilding in which fat people go in and display their fat in non-competitive ways. People can look them up. A lot of these didn't gain traction because they're too esoteric. I can tell you about some of them if you want, but I think that the larger point is that we pointed out that there are problems in this body of literature. Those problems are influencing public policies and university policies, which are then reinforcing themselves. Things are bleeding out of the university, and it's all predicated on something that's inherently corrupt.
There's so many levels in your story, in your personal story in Portland State University, where you could say this is broken. Just like in the media, there's some areas where media is not broken, but there's critical areas where media is broken, politics are broken, and the problem is it infiltrates. I mean, it used to be the case, even if you didn't agree with the university, the teachers themselves were not activists.
Correct.
They were teachers. Now they're activists, and they're doing things that are teaching our kids. Whether you agree with woke culture or not, the way it's being taught is that I find morally reprehensible.
All right, let's talk about this. So let's say that you agree with woke culture. Let's say you're a big fan of cancel culture. Let's say that you think all white people are intrinsically racist. Let's say that we need to give a kind of equity-based reparations for people who have historical injustices, except for Asians and Jews. So let's say that you buy some of these fundamental principles of woke ideology. in one sense, the next question to that would be, well, if you believe you have the truth, why wouldn't you want to have different conversations with people? Why wouldn't you want to bring in people and let others decide for themselves in the same way of my atheist class? Like, why wouldn't you want to just bring... Well, the answer to that is that they do not believe in conversation, discourse, dialogue, etc. They believe that those things are tools of the white man. They're tools of white people, and those are designed to keep minorities and people with historical oppression variables down. So once you understand that, then they have a literature around that, platforming. We don't want to get platform people. And what you said about when you went on Fox, you then have guilt by association.
No, not guilt by association, but people were offended by association.
Yeah, okay, offended by association, or you're guilty, or you're offended. It doesn't matter. It's the same kind of principle that's right. Operative. There are mechanisms in place to buttress the ideology to prevent it from being questioned. And again, if that were a religion, you know, in a local church, okay, well, we can have that conversation. I've written a whole book about why I think that's a problem. But this is now happening to our academic institutions.
Right. And what people don't realize, which was so aptly pointed out in both Cynical Theories by your friends, Helen and James, and also Jonah Goldberg's book, Liberal Fascism, is that these are the tools that starts authoritarian regimes like Germany or, you know, Stalinism or Maoism. Right. And Jonah Goldberg, documents this historically very well, and he's well respected. And so are, you know, Cynical Theories was a best-selling book by James Lindsay by Helen and James.
Yeah.
People have documented this. So, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just want, just as an aside, you know, Jonah Goldberg calls, you know, capitalism the miracle. The first line in that book is, I think, you know, this book starts with the assumption that there is no God. But here's what's interesting. I was going to say that Cynical Theories, I think, has sold over 200,000 copies. But yet, this will tell you about, you know, wokeism spreading. The New York Times is a woke disgrace, even though they now have John McWhorter writing for them. And what they did to Barry Weiss was a disgrace. But they left Cynical Theories off of the New York Times bestseller list, even though it had sold enough by a discrete metric to be on the New York Times bestseller list. They did the exact same thing to Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life.
Yeah, it's a shame that everybody looks at the New York Times bestseller list as a signal of literary success, when actually it's totally subjective who gets on. There's one person who decides what books go on and in what order, and that person can just make it up.
So I think that we have a problem. People have woken up, if you will allow me the turn of phrase, to what the problem is. They're sick of it. They don't like walking on eggshells. They don't know what to do about it. We know, as I've been screaming about for years, Lola, they know exactly where this problem comes from. It comes from the university. The article, and if you would please, if you could please post in the description the article from the American Sociological Review, that would be fantastic. I think people should see that themselves. And it's worth reading the whole piece in its entirety. So we have a problem. We know where this problem comes from. And it's not only is it not going away, ideologues have taken hold of the institution, and there's ideological capture of those of our knowledge, our engines of knowledge production. These people have jobs for life. They have tenure. They teach people. We can talk about the whole mechanism of how the ideology reinforces itself. Hey, Lola.
It's okay though. People have dogs. Okay,
that's my mentor, Frank Wesley. He was in Buchenwald, and he went on he died at 98 to liberate the very concentration camp in which the Nazis put him. He was actually one of the most amazing, if not the most amazing people I ever met. When they put him in, they interned him. He was picked up on Kristallnacht, and he told me the insane stories. Like, the Nazis would walk him around, and they'd yell Jew at him, and they had these big belt buckles with belts, and they'd whip him as they went around, and they walked in circles. And He was amazing. Like among the things he told me, that he prevented the very guards who inflicted unspeakable cruelty on him. He prevented those people from being murdered by the other prisoners and by the guards who liberated the camp. I mean, there is a model of decency. Like, contrast that with all this punching Nazi stuff, right? I mean, right. It's just.
Let me ask you, because that's such a beautiful story. And you knew him personally, and you probably heard many more stories of his bravery and so on. Do you think
decency?
Do you think right? But I'm going to call it bravery for a reason. Do you think philosophical bravery like that exists now? Like, are there like? It's hard to even think of a situation where one, like, so you philosophically believe in decency and you use bravery. You put yourself at risk to enforce what you philosophically believe in about decency. And so that's why I distinguish that from bravery and I distinguish that from decency. So do you think philosophical bravery like that exists now?
I think it's in extremely short supply. And please allow me to give you an example. One of the hottest topics right now in this country is mandatory vaccinations and vaccine passports. Now, it doesn't make any difference what you think of that or what I think of that. Those are really important issues that affect the way we govern ourselves as a society, and literally everybody is talking about it. I mean, it's causing bitterness and divisiveness across the country, and it's almost exclusively along party lines. Why have there been virtually no philosophers to speak up about this? Philosophy has a very important contribution, the analytical, the rigor that we can bring to the analysis of that debate and both sides. But yet there are virtually no philosophers, academic philosophers, people who specialize in ethics, speaking out about this. I have my own speculations as to why that would be, and why the university creates a kind of, the tenure process creates a kind of submission and cowardice in people.
But it's not just the university system, it's social media too.
That's a big part of it.
Whatever the issue is, if a social media company disagrees with you, you could get banned. And the Ayatollah of Iran could say whatever he wants about Israel, but you'll get banned for saying something about dogs and rape culture, like who or whatever.
Correct.
So let me ask your advice, because this affects society at every level. Like, you've been personally affected. You found it to be too hostile environment to work in, so you quit Portland State University, and that puts your life at risk. Like, you have to make a living for your family, and you can't have half the country thinking you're immoral. There's you're going through a tough period because of this, and this is happening also at corporations. Like, there's corporations now. I just heard about one. I won't name it because I haven't verified it, but a major corporation where you have to apologize for whatever transgressions you could think of that you might not even believe in, and whatever. I don't know. But I feel like I have suffered. We all have suffered through this to some extent or other, but I have my own situations where I've suffered through some of this. And I feel like I got a little depressed about it. Like, so I moved and moved again until now I'm sort of as isolated, the most isolated I've been in my life, really. Not because I'm trying to hide from anyone, but just because I don't want to deal with it. And maybe still tinged with a little, like a simmer of depression about it. Like, what advice would you give me? Like, I think the goal is to really not care so much, because you'll get frustrated if you care because you can't fix it.
I don't know if the goal is to not care so much, although I'm sympathetic to people who just want to, because I've had the thought myself, who just want to go on a live on a farm and wait until the madness subsides.
But that's essentially what I did.
Yeah, well, I mean, even in those situations, if you look at not only the psychological literature but the philosophical, I mean, dating back to Aristotle, one of the things that gives us the most the most fulfillment in life, I don't want to say the less, I think that the word that they use in the psychological literature is fulfillment, is having relationships that matter. And key to having relationships that matter are you have to be able to speak to the people with whom you're speaking in an honest, open, and forthright way. Because if you don't do that, then people will never know you for who you are. They'll only know you for who you think they are, and vice versa. And so at the core of all of this, we have to maintain our integrity and we have to maintain our ability to speak freely with people. And if you do that, then, and I guess I have a message that's bundled into that for young people. If you do that, you will have a better life because you'll have relationships that matter and you'll be surrounded by people you can trust and you can be open and honest with. But many young people, I think, they're afraid of, you know, losing friends. My advice to you in no uncertain terms is that these people are not your friends. They're not your friends because your relationship wasn't based on virtue. It was based on something else.
But also, a lot of people, I think there's also a culture of, and this is related to cancel culture, but not the exact thing. This is always the case. The youth and people in general, not just young people, but people in general are influenced by people in the hierarchy above them. So if you're a student, Correct. You're influenced by your professor. If you're an employee, you're influenced by your boss. If you're a child, Correct. You're influenced by your parents. And so that's always existed. And, you know, if I don't like golf, but I'm working in an office where everybody plays golf, and if I want to be one of the guys, I'll go play golf. And if I don't, I might not get financial benefits from it. You know, that's the same kind of issue, but not as repugnant, but it's the same kind of issue.
Yeah, and so I guess the question that everybody has to ask themselves is, what kind of life do you want to lead? My dad used to always tell me, make sure that you leave the world better when you left than when you came in. Part and parcel of that is trying to lead a reflect. It's Socrates' question or admonition. What's the best type of life? And the unexamined life is not worth living. So it's we have to not only examine our own lives and be honest with ourselves and stick to basic intellectual virtues like being willing to revise our beliefs, but we have to stand up when there's an injustice, right? You just can't let first they came for and then they came for. You just can't let an injustice steamroll the society.
So what are you going to do? Like, now you're out there in the wild blue yonder, whatever you call it. Like, you've resigned from. Correctly, congratulations on resigning.
Thank you. Rather than futilely fighting
a corrupt system.
Thank you.
What are you going to do now? What offers have come in? How do you plan on living?
Free, with my integrity intact. I started a nonprofit, National Progress Alliance. It's at nationalprogressalliance.org, and I'm going to fight this back. I'm writing another book right now. It's a children's book. It's based upon the life of a young Socrates as he roams a mythical Greek countryside and has conversations with people about a wide variety of things. It's just one of his superpowers.
I love that.
My goal is to empower young readers to know that they can have their own superpower and that it's anybody can access that.
I think that's a brilliant idea for a book, actually, because Socrates is sort of like, I view him almost as like the invention of pure curiosity and how to approach relationships with others, knowledge, yourself, information. I also, for adults, I also recommend Paul Johnson, the historian Paul Johnson's book about Socrates. It was called Socrates. And I think that was a very, very excellent introduction to Socrates.
Mm. Yeah, so I'm gonna do that. I'm producing a whole lot of videos that are gonna come out on this topic through my nonprofit, and it basically explains, for example, when the woke say houseless, what do they mean? How does it differ from homeless? How does it differ from other? So I'm releasing a series of 1-minute videos on that, and they're professionally done. They're pretty good. I'm just watching them last night or the night before. I'm producing another video series about how colleges of education became woke with Lyle Asher and other people. So I'm going to do video series. I'm pretty excited. I'm working pretty hard to fight back on what's happening now. The illiberalism, the censoriousness, because nobody benefits. Nobody benefits.
How are you making a living? Like, you should maybe, like how Barry Weiss left the New York Times, and she's doing very well with a newsletter on Substack. Yeah.
So I just spoke to the Substack people, what's today, Wednesday? Tuesday. I just spoke to them on Monday, and I may do Substack. I'm not sure yet, but it seems interesting. I have a lot going on. I have to write a weekly column And I'm pretty persnickety about the stuff I write. And I was told it's kind of the midway between writing a piece for the Wall Street Journal and talking to your friends. And that's a way to think about it. But I have a lot of things going on down the pike that are pretty exciting.
You should, because you are really good at doing these kind of hoax academic things, you should do something like how, what's that guy, James O'Keefe? You know, he does all these hoaxes, political hoaxes. Oh yeah, Jim O'Keefe. He did the one where he's like pretending to be a pimp and a prostitute, and they're trying to get federal help or stimulus money.
James O'Keefe. Maybe Jay can send me that link if you don't mind, Jay.
Yeah, Project Veritas. So
Yes, I know that. Yes. But Jay, send me the link if you don't mind.
Yeah, and you should do something like that, like more hoaxes, and then do like a Patreon, set up a Patreon account to kind of people could donate money who believe in what you're doing to support you in doing your hoaxes.
If I were to do the hoaxes, they would have to have a larger meaning, and I think the meaning that I would want to convey is, if you can believe absurdities, you can commit atrocities, and that's the situation in which we find ourselves. There's so much absurd coming out of the universities right now. I'm not the first person who said that, but there's so much absurd stuff coming out of the universities right now that it is inevitable that people will talk about, you know, book burning, jailing people who don't conform to something, and God forbid the CC word, which I won't mention. So I think that if I were to do something like that, it would have to have a larger a meaning behind it.
Yeah. Well, how are you, not that you necessarily, maybe you had savings or other money, but how are you don't have this job now. How are you making a living?
Yeah, that's a good question. Get back to me on that, soon enough.
Excellent. Well, Peter, it is always enlightening to talk to you. I really enjoy
James.
It. You have an open invitation to this podcast. Whenever you've got something you want to talk about, come on over, and you're very popular with the listeners. And I highly recommend people also listen to the last time you were on with the power of how to have impossible conversations. And people should definitely read that book. That book has practically, and I mean it in the practical sense, it has actually helped me and been usable. As evidenced by, I used an example of it with you, and you said that was the way you had
this conversation. That's exactly what I did. And I want to thank you sincerely for your support. I want to thank your viewers and your listeners. I mean, truly, the outpouring of support has been incredible, and I'm so grateful for that. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and good luck, and keep sending us your stuff, and you'll come back on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks so much.
Appreciate it. Thanks, James.